Nehemiah chapter 5, we read in the first two verses of the chapter, Nehemiah chapter 5, verses 1 and 2. And there was a great cry of the people and of their wives against their brethren the Jews. For there were that said, we, our sons and our daughters, are many. Therefore we take up corn for them, that we may eat and live. A minister in America was coming towards the end of his retirement. I'm sure, as you could expect, he was starting to make plans, and so he purchased a new home for his wife and for himself. Upon completion and exchange of deposit and keys, he had some painters come into the house and to do some touching up business, and also some joiners as well. After they did the work, he finished in his charge and he moved into his lovely new home. Things went well for the first few weeks and he was enjoying his new home and retired life. However, approximately after 1 month, he found that there were some little problems beginning to appear. Firstly, the doors, they were beginning to stick. Then the windows, they were beginning to stick. He couldn't close them properly. Then he noticed one day as he was sitting in the kitchen that cracks were beginning to appear. Then eventually there were cracks going up the every single wall of the house, and he soon realized that he had a serious structural problem in his hand. He decided to hire in his friend who was an engineer to look at the problem. And when he did, he uncovered a terrible secret. Old topographical maps showed that when the house was first built, it was built over a ravine or a large gully. The developer, as he was building the house, he had filled in that ravine or that gully. However, there seems that there was a small amount of water flow beneath the house. This water had been carrying tiny amounts of soil. And so we find that the house was literally gradually eroding away beneath it. Eventually, the strain proved too much. And we find that the minister who had just bought this house, he watched his house literally cave in before his very eyes. And you know, here in Nehemiah chapter 5, we uncover a terrible ravine of erosion that had been eating away at the children of Israel. Now, if you were to look on the surface, everything would have seemed well. Everything would have seemed fine. However, when you dig deeper beneath the surface, you find that there was this terrible eroding thing that was now threatening to capsize the very camp of Israel. The children of Israel, they had been largely together up until this point. They had fought the enemy together. They had built the walls together, and except for a few nobles who didn't put their necks to the work, they seemed like a camp in harmony. However, whilst all seemed to be well on the surface, you find sadly there was a little issue that was lurking beneath the surface. It had been swimming around the lowly waters, but it now threatened to put the whole work in jeopardy. This issue, sadly, was greed. Greed. And whenever Nehemiah was made aware of this issue, we find, like the good leader he always was, or he nearly always was, he confronted the issue head on. And whenever he confronted that issue, he then restored peace and harmony back to the camp. And whilst there are times that issues need to be dealt with softly and even subtly, there are other times that issues need to be dealt with strongly. There are times in your life where sometimes you, just like Nehemiah, you need to, as it were, be firm with the issue. Often you will. The best way to deal with certain issues is to be soft. It is to be tender. It is to be slender. But there are also times when we need to be firm. There are times when we need to be firm when dealing with an issue. And here we find Nehemiah. This is exactly what he did. As he saw this, as he understood it all playing out before him, we find he got a handle, or he got a grip on the issue. And that's what I want to consider this morning. I want to consider Nehemiah getting to grips with greed. Nehemiah getting to grips with greed. I want you to notice firstly here the setback he experienced. The setback he experienced. Nehemiah, as we discovered a few weeks ago, as we made our way through chapter 4, Nehemiah, he faced many a battle. He had faced the battle of discouragement, faced the battle of weary workers. He had also faced battles with the enemy. But now he faced another battle. He faced another setback, and this time it was the setback of greed. Notice here with me, thinking about this setback, notice the causes of the setback. Verses 3 and 5 in particular tells us why this problem of greed actually developed in the camp of Judah. There were, I believe, three causes, and just bear with me as I make my way through these causes. The first cause, I believe, was population. Population. Verse 2, we read, "We our sons and daughters are many. Therefore we take up corn for them, that we may eat and live." As we saw in the beginning of this book, there were many, many people who were flooding down into Jerusalem. They had heard the call, as it were. They had heard that call being championed forth by Nehemiah. And it seems that there were those from the surrounding areas of Jerusalem. They were all now flooding in. It was all hands on deck to help with the rebuilding of the walls. And just as it is with any city, and we even have found this in our own city, whenever there are more people who flood into that city, you find that eventually the city becomes overpopulated. And we find then there wasn't really that much ground that was available or sufficient to meet the demands of the people. An ever-diminishing crop, it just couldn't sustain the people. And so here was a first cause that led to this problem, population. But there is also a second cause, taxation. Taxation. Verse 4, we read, "We have borrowed money for the king's tribute, and that upon our lands and vineyards." We saw in our studies in Nehemiah that King Artaxerxes, the king of Persia, who was in Shushan, the palace, I saw that he really had dominion over the then known world. His army was getting bigger. His dynasty was growing. And with an ever-growing dynasty and army, well, he had wages to pay. His army, they didn't work for nothing. And so, to fund his armies and his schemes, we find he decided to up the taxation rate. And this even affected the Jews in Jerusalem that lived 800 miles away from him in Persia. Also remember, tax collectors in Bible times, they were known for being a little bit crafty, taking a sum for themselves. And so we find that the city was becoming overpopulated. There were high tax rates. And this then led to another problem. It led to the problem of unfair inflation. Verse 5, we read, "We bring into bondage our sons and our daughters to be servants. And some of our daughters are brought into bondage already. Neither is it in our power to redeem them. For other men have our lands and vineyards." There were rich Jews in Jerusalem, and they were beginning to exploit the situation. They had come back to Jerusalem 12, 13 years previously under the rulership of Ezra. And so they had a first dibs, as it were, on the land. And so they, as it were, they bought up all the land. And you know, imagine this new influx of people into Jerusalem. They could really set their price, as it were. And so what did they do? As tax rates were getting higher, this group who owned the land in Jerusalem, this older group of Jews, they put up their interest rates, their mortgage rates, and their rent rates. So I want you just to imagine that you are a new Jew, as it were, and you're coming into the city. You've been there for perhaps a couple of months. You've helped out with the rebuilding project. And now all of a sudden, the man that you're paying your rent to, he just makes the rent rate higher and higher and higher. And your taxes, they're getting higher and higher as well. What had happened? Well, we find sadly in this verse, those who struggled to pay their bills, they had to sell their children into slavery. Verse 5 we read, "We bring into bondage our sons and our daughters to be servants." And that word servants just means slaves. And so we find to, as it were, pay their bills, to pay these other greedy Jews, just to make ends meet, they had to sell their children into slavery. And so with a growing population and a high tax rate, These Jews, they were taking advantage of the situation. They were taking advantage of their brethren and making it impossible to live a normal life. And it reminds us that greed is like an ever-growing weed. Whenever you feed it, the more it grows and takes over. And sadly, this was the case with some of the elders of Judah. They realized the situation. They realized that they really had a monopoly on the land. And so what did they do? They hiked up the prices against their brethren, and they made it absolutely impossible to live. And I trust this morning that this is not your outlook on your finances. God doesn't want us to be ravenous. He doesn't want us to be covetous. He doesn't want us to be constantly taking and taking and taking, and never giving and giving and giving. Now the Bible tells us that there's nothing wrong with being thrifty with our income. There's nothing wrong with being wise and being good stewards. But at the same time, we shouldn't be manipulative and take advantage of those in need. And so the causes of the setback, really it was greed. It was greed. But notice also here the consequences of the setback. Verse 1 we read, "There was a great cry of the people and of their wives against the brethren, the Jews." The actions of the Jews, well, it had terrible, terrible consequences. It actually threatened to stop the entire rebuilding project. You imagine it. You imagine working night and day, as we saw last week, how there were some workers who only had enough time to come home and to get changed and to go back to the work on the wall. The workforce would have been becoming less and less as they had to sell their children. And then as they also had to try and work their normal jobs as well as rebuild this wall, really they were juggling so many things that they couldn't spend as much time rebuilding the wall. They had to keep up with their payments of rent and of mortgages. And we're told here in verse 1, there was a great cry among the people. The word here in the original, it has the idea of a high-pitched shriek. And so we find there were some Jews, and they were actually shrieking over this terrible sin of their brethren. And this sin of greed, it threatened to dampen the whole welfare and unity of the rebuilding project. You see, sin doesn't sleep. Sin spreads. And often sin swells so much that it can affect the entire activity or harmony of a church. How we conduct ourselves amongst our brethren is very, very important. We are to conduct ourselves so as to preserve our unity, our harmony, so as the activity of this church is preserved. Often is it not the case that one small deed done, one small thing said, one small greedy action, it can develop into terrible discord. And so much so that it threatens to hinder the entire work of God. Paul reminds us of this when he wrote to the Corinthian church. And he said in 1 Corinthians 5 verse 6, "Your glorying is not good. Know ye not that a little leaven leaveneth the whole lump?" And Paul here was writing to the Corinthian church, and he was teaching them, and he was dealing with their open toleration of sin. And when doing this, he stated that it was like leaven. Of course, whenever leaven or yeast gets into a mix of dough, it destroys the entire loaf. And Paul here, he stated their toleration of sin. It threatened to be a leaven and to destroy the purity of the entire church. You see, division is often like leaven. It starts small, and then it develops and spreads until it threatens the entire loaf of the brethren. Oh, be very, very careful. Be very, very careful, believer, this morning. Don't let things fester. Don't let bitterness, unpleasantness, don't let sharpness settle in. Don't harbor it or even let it develop. Because if you do, you could be the leaven that threatens to leaven the entire lump. You know, in the 1950s, an airline company, they began to make their first airliners. They made a tremendous boast in the media that they had made the perfect airliners. In 1954, however, whenever they launched their first two liners and they went up into the air, the aeroplane, it literally disintegrated in the air, and sadly it killed 56 people. Whenever the designers looked at the problem, they found out that what actually caused the jets to disintegrate was because they were made with square windows. Square windows caused numerous weak points throughout the entire plane, and so the plane literally disintegrated in mid-air. Even today, if you're on an aeroplane, look at the windows. You'll find that they are round or oval. And this issue of charging too much interest, it threatened the entire well-being of the walls. The setback he experienced. Notice secondly here the strategy he employed. Verse 6 we read, "I was very angry when I heard their cry and these words." Nehemiah, when he heard about this, heard about the fact that the children of Judah, they were charging their brethren a higher interest rate, he was very angry. And he then proceeded to deal with the problem in front of him. I believe in this strategy, there were two things that he did. The first thing he did was consultation. Consultation. Verse 7 we read, "Then I consulted with myself, and I rebuked the nobles and the rulers, and said unto them." Here again we see the wisdom of Nehemiah. We have seen time and time in our studies how Nehemiah, whenever he confronts or he is faced with an issue, he never acts immediately. And here it is exactly the same in this issue. He was never really a man to dive into something, for he had to firstly think it all through, and then he dealt with the issue. Now verse 6 tells us something. It tells us that he was very, very angry. He was angry. Whenever he saw the sin of his brethren, he was extremely angry. But verse 7 tells us how he reacts to the anger. He says he consulted, "I consulted myself." It literally means to give yourself advice. He had a conversation with himself. I think this is very interesting. He didn't just come to those who were in the wrong and vent his anger at them. No, he got angry privately. And then he cooled down. He talked to himself. He, as it were, let off some steam. And he then talked to God before he thought through what he would do next. You see, the best way to deal with anger is not combat. No, it is to calm down, to compose yourself, to consult with yourself, to converse with yourself, and also to converse with God. Is it not the case that so much damage is done whenever you just react immediately or angrily or hastily? The best way to deal with a situation is to consult with yourself. It is to, as it were, take some time, go to a quiet place, to, as it were, let off your steam. And then when you've calmed down, then think through how you're going to react. Indeed, in Proverbs 15, verse 1, we're told a soft answer turns away wrath, but grievous words stir up anger. And isn't it not the case? As Solomon here in his wisdom is teaching us, whenever you speak those grievous words, they're not for the good of the person, but rather they're for their worse. And often when you, as it were, lash out, you hit out in anger, often they stir up or they provoke that other person. You see, words spoken in anger don't just settle. They stir up. They actually do more harm than good. And the Lord here is teaching you that that's the best way to deal with anger especially. Whenever you're angry at something, and even as Nehemiah, sometimes we can be righteously angry about something. But he still didn't just lash out. He didn't react, as it were. He consulted with himself, and then he reacted. You know, Abe Lincoln, Secretary of War, Edwin Stanton, he was very angry because of an officer who accused him of favoritism. Stanton came to Lincoln, Abraham Lincoln, and Abraham Lincoln said to him, "Look, Stanton, write this man a letter, and that'll deal with it." And so whenever he wrote a letter, Lincoln then came to Stanton, and he said, "What should I do?" And Stanton, he said, "Well, I'm just going to send this letter." And Lincoln, he said, "No, no, Don't send the letter. You have written that letter. Now put it in a stove. That's what I do when I've written a letter while I'm angry. It's a good letter. You've had a good time writing it. You have let off your anger. Now burn the letter and write another. And you know, this is really what Nehemiah did. He, figuratively speaking, he wrote himself an angry letter and then he threw it in the fire. Consultation, but also in this strategy, notice also here, confrontation. Confrontation. Verse 10, we read, I likewise and my brethren and my servants might exact of them money and corn. I pray you, let us leave off this usury. Nehemiah, he knew that the actions of the Jews, they were wrong. The Levitical law, it actually stipulated that if you are to loan a fellow Jew money, that you're not to charge any interest at all. Deuteronomy 23 verse 19 states, thou shalt not lend upon usury to thy brother. You could lend them money, but you were not to charge them interest. And also in regards to receiving Jews as slaves, this also was wrong. Leviticus 25 states that Jews were not to be made slaves of other Jews. And so whenever they accepted the sons and daughters as the slaves of these brethren, again they were committing a sin. And so Nehemiah knew this. And what did he do? He then confronted the greedy. He came to them and he rebuked them for their wrongdoing. And after consultation with yourself, there must be confrontation of the wronged. This is the scriptural way to deal with conflict. Is it not the case that whenever someone speaks ill of you, they speak ill to you, that often you can consult with yourself, you can get angry, but you refuse to do the second step. You refuse actually, or you so often we don't actually go to the person who's wronged us. Maybe you say to me this morning, well, I'm not the type of person to lash out angrily, and that's a good thing. But the Bible here is teaching you that you also need to confront the person about the issue. We're not just, as it were, to sweep it onto the carpet and hope that it sorts itself out. No, the Bible teaches us we are to confront those who have wronged us. Matthew 18 verse 15 tells us, if thy brother shall trespass against thee, go and tell him his fault between thee and him alone. And if he shall hear thee, thou hast gained thy brother. Christ tells us the way to deal with conflict is to personally go and sort out the matter with that person one on one. You see, we're not just to consider the matter. We're then to confront others with the matter. We are to go to the person who's wronged us, and we are to deal with it in a calm and a calculated manner. So often, whenever someone's wronged us, we tell other people that they've wronged us. And we even, as it were, sometimes lash out, just like Nehemiah, we, as it were, lash out ourselves. But we don't go that next step. We don't actually confront the person and deal with it face to face. But this is what Nehemiah did. He confronted the issue. He did it in a calm way. He came to only those who were guilty and he dealt with the issue. But nevertheless, he did face it. He did face it. The setback he experienced, the strategy employed. But notice lastly and quickly here, the solution he enjoyed. Verse 12 we read, then said they, we will restore them and will require nothing of them. So will we do as thou sayest. The nobles and the elders, whenever they were confronted by Nehemiah, they agreed with him. They realized, look, we've been violating scripture. And so they agreed with him. And they then made a solemn oath or a solemn vow that they would never do this again. And then, whenever Nehemiah dealt with the matter, that was it. They then moved on, they consecrated themselves afresh to the work, and they then got on with their business. And whenever you deal with conflict, It's then dead and buried, never more to be resurrected. Whenever you deal with an issue, someone or something, they've wronged you, maybe you've wronged them, you're not to flaunt it again before them. Rather, the issue, it's dead and buried and forgotten. And the wonderful thing about this was that the work continued. The work continued. What a wonderful solution to Nehemiah getting a grip on greed. And I trust this has been a challenge, but also an encouragement to you in your walk with God this morning. May God bless his word to your hearts today.